This is a Decentered podcast from Rob Watson. Conversations about community media. Look out for Decentered Media on Twitter and on iTunes, or go to decentered.co.uk. Hello, it's Thursday the 20th of February, and this is a Decentered Media podcast with me, Rob Watson, and today I'm talking over the power of the internet with Jay Sykes, who is in Sunderland. I'm assuming you're in Sunderland today.
I am in Sunderland today. Just finished teaching at the university, and I've nicked one of the radio studios to record this in.
Now, you describe yourself as, I'm looking at your website here, which is jsykesmedia.com, as an award-winning audio producer creating content for various companies and partners, and that you are broadly involved in sound and sound art. Would that be a good description, or do you want to elaborate on that?
That's all right. I mean, you've always got to start with the awkward award-winning, haven't you? It's one of those things that I still wonder, should I be putting that right at the front of my title? Does it still carry the weight that it did when I won it 5 years ago as a student?
Well, yeah, why not? You know, you make the most of these things, I think.
I suppose if people say, what do you do? I'll say to them, I am a freelance audio producer and an academic tutor and an arts facilitator. And I sort of live in a cross section of those three things.
Right, the cross section, that's what we're interested in. That's where we're on a kind of spend, we usually talk for about an hour, so kind of spend some time thinking that through and finding out how you got into it and what you get out of it, really. So kind of paint us a picture of what's that journey been like? Where have you come from? What have you been doing? And how did you get into kind of radio and audio in the first place?
Well, for me, and by the way, thank you so much for having me on board this. It's so lovely to be welcomed in as part of the family. I started this journey when I was choosing which university to go to back in 2010. And I settled on Sunderland to do a degree in BA Media Production. And I've been in Sunderland mostly since 2010. So the past whole decade now, which is sort of weird to come to terms with. And I was really interested in doing something that was creative. I was very open. The other offer I had from York University, for instance, was writing, directing and performing, which was more theatre-based, and it could have taken me in a completely different direction. And I'd never done radio before at this point, but I threw myself into the media production course, threw myself into volunteering at Spark FM starting in 2010, and haven't looked back since. I've fallen in love with audio and really enjoy working on audio projects, especially ones that involve participatory media.
So what was that first kind of couple of sessions that you got, you know, on the course where you were, you know, remember back, what was that like when you first kind of was introduced to, you know, to use the cliche, being on the other side of the microphone?
I barely remember it these days. It's so weird trying to think back through the fog. I remember the show on Spark a lot more clearly, and I remember being a complete jitter of nerves and having planned content, but it not quite going as well as you think inside your head. And then in the class itself, I was taught at the time, the first year was taught by technician Grant Lowry, and I remember creating like a minute-long drama, which was about someone being trapped in a basement. And I think I poured my energy into that project, and it made me start to love audio drama. That for me was like that mixture of drama and audio production that I grew to love. It's weird thinking back, Rob.
Let's spend some time doing it, because we seldom get the opportunity to either look back or think ahead, really. So it's, yeah. I'm just kind of writing some notes as I'm listening. It's kind of I like that phrase, the kind of fog of the past, particularly in Sunderland. And but the kind of energy that goes into, what is it then drew you into kind of audio drama and a sound world? What was it that kind of appealed to you? Because you could, you know, most people I know who turn up and do media courses are very interested in video, and there's actually very few people who are genuinely interested in audio content and exploring sound, using it in that way.
I wasn't against video. I was very open. And I think I loved Sunderland for its facilities when I saw it back in 2009, picking universities. I loved it for its TV studios. I loved it for its potential to do film production just as much as for its radio studios. And I remember being really passionate about making film documentaries as well. Like, there was no... At that point, I really was like a boy in the sea that could go either way. And it just
bobbing along, and you could have been taken by the tide anywhere.
Pretty much. It's a nice metaphor, isn't it?
Well, I mean, sometimes we are encouraged to kind of have strategic plans and to, you know, kind of all the advice that a lot of young people are given these days is, you know, kind of thinking through what you need to do to get into, you know, the world that you want to go and work in and make that next step. But actually just being carried along and seeing where you end up, it can be a much more interesting way of doing things. You know, the plan is not to have a plan.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what, if you've not got a specific plan for this, if you weren't driven?
I was driven by storytelling. And I was driven by storytelling in a creative way. So that was my drive.
Explain to us then, what is it about storytelling that that appeals to you?
I've just always enjoyed it throughout being a kid. I mean, you often hear interviews where people are saying that they would get a tape recorder and they'd wander around the house interviewing relatives, and that was very much me. I'd be creating stories. I had this little dictaphone that I recorded this drama series with my friends on the caravan site where I went every summer. It's called Disaster, and the world would end in 2027, and we'd have to go back in time to try and prevent it. And so that all exists on a little tiny tape somewhere.
So you're not you're not new to this. This is something that you've been, you know. I mean, I used to do that, you know, as a kid. I remember sitting in a friend's house. I was about 10, 11 years old, something like that, and doing the same thing, recording stupid, kind of goonsy kind of, you know, kind of skits or whatever you want to call it. But it was there. But yeah. We seldom get the opportunity to go and to just do that and to allow that creativity to open up, because that kind of, it's slightly embarrassing. Or it's quite childish. And what's the problem with that?
Exactly. We can't lose that, Rob. We can't lose the childish element in us. We can try and suppress it, but I think if you lose touch with it, then life becomes a little bit boring or routine. And I like that I'm working in different jobs that allow me to have that, I wouldn't say childlike quality to it, but just the freedom to be a bit creative at times. I don't think I'd be the same person without it.
But particularly in audio medium, have you focused on audio rather than maybe doing any other kind of visualized kind of?
Well, accidentally. I mean, for me, if you'd have asked me when I was, I don't know, 14, 16, 18 years old, I'd have given you different answers at each age. At 16, I was like, I want to be a writer. And I was focusing a lot of my time on this idea for a novel called Tyler, which was like a gay love romance between a guy who lived in the States and a guy who lived in the UK. And that very much took up my world as a 16-year-old. And so I think the things that you focus on shift over time. And it just so happens that at the point of going to university, I was interested in the media in general. And that's why with Sunderland's approach of it being both TV and radio, that caught my attention, as well as a location as well. Because I wanted to go to Sunderland because it wasn't posh. And I wanted the more working class vibe space to go to that wasn't like my other one, University of York. I thought, am I gonna feel comfortable here? So I ended up at that time going to Sunderland. It just happened that way. I was that, like, that boy in the ocean.
And what then kind of helped you to get through that process then? So, you know, you kind of three years of being a student.
Well, and, you know. 1 year in Sunderland, 1 year in the States, and 1 year back in Sunderland for my final year.
Where did you go in the States?
Oh, Illinois State University. Rob, it was incredible. It's the state where Chicago is at the top, but it was basically, they call it Chicago and grass. And it was this little town called Normal, like out of the way, in the sticks. It was a college town, so like two-thirds of the people were students. That's probably an exaggeration.
And you had to make your own entertainment there because there was nothing around.
Well, yeah, there was a cinema and a Walmart, but yeah, I loved it there. And I always knew. And this is why I was, another reason I wanted to go to Sunderland was because it allowed people to go abroad. It was one of the universities with good links. So, and I always knew I wanted to go to the States. Yeah, I guess for, you can drill into all the different factors for ages, can't you? But it was a combination of things that led me to Sunderland. And then I was like, I must go and study in the States. And that was a really, really brilliant year. Yeah.
What do you think you learned from that?
It certainly upended some of the things that I'd learned about radio over here. Of course, their model is so different, so much more commercialized than the community radio that I was used to over here working at Spark or volunteering at Spark. And I remember they stipulated at the student radio station over there called WZND Fused Radio that you had to do 4 links per hour, just 4. And me being the kind of like, I wouldn't even say go-getter hedonistic, but I was used to what was happening in Spark. And it was a case of you build the content around the hour and sculpt it in your own way. And I was scolded terribly for speaking like more than the 4 times per hour. And I was crying like,
well, you may as well have got a job as a supermarket announcer, you know. You know, that would probably have been more work and more original content by the sounds of it. So did you chaff against that? Were you kind of, did you find that, you know, how did you manage that? Because if it was different from where your personality fits in and what you're used to, that can be quite, you know, kind of strap your hands behind your back so you don't open the fader. Somebody else does it for you 4 times an hour.
Yeah, well, you can find enjoyment in anything, can't you? I did enjoy it, but I knew at that point that commercial radio in general, where you've only got like a limited talk time and you've got to be really creative in a quick way, I knew that that wasn't the kind of thing that I wanted to do for life based on that experience.
So what's the difference then? What is it that you then, so you come back then after being in the States for 12 months and you know, you kind of back at Spark, and what was the noticeable difference or sense of relief or sense of, you know, I take it there's no sense of dread about going back because you found it a positive experience, but the, you know, what did it give you the freedom to do?
I guess one thing that I did do whilst I was in the States that really occupied my attention and brought me back with great passion was we did advertising and we did like narrative fiction writing on the radio, creating audio dramas. And for me, being someone who had a background in amateur theater, growing up through youth theater, as well as this keen passion for creating storytelling, I fell in love with the idea of making bless you.
I know, it's like the weather's been rubbish today and it's really got to me throat. So.
Oh, sweetheart. Have you been out in it much?
No, not that much, but sorry, I kind of interrupted you.
No, it's okay. It's fine. If you need to take a break at any point, just let me know, please.
Will do, but I'm fine.
Yeah, I loved the idea of making audio dramas so much. So when I came back, being taught by the wonderful Martin Shingler and Andy Cartwright on the third year, where there's a whole module for audio drama, I threw myself into that. I loved it. It was a brilliant module. And to this date, probably the best part of a university class I've ever taken.
Because
I could create my own stories, and I was in a supportive environment where other people were doing the same. I made this piece called 1:27, which was like the timestamp, so 1:27 in the afternoon, which was about a cafe, and there was a big argument in a cafe that led to someone throwing a plate against a wall. And then like you sort of went back in time 20 minutes to see the calamity unfolding. And I found it such a rewarding experience in terms of narrative structure within drama production. That for me, and again, it's weird. I don't produce many audio dramas at the moment, but that was the thing that I wanted to do and take forward post-university.
So that allows you to step into, it's the blank canvas, isn't it, of you're creating a world just purely with sounds.
Yeah. And there's you'll be well versed in all the theories of the fact that audio storytelling is so much, potentially so much richer than visual, because it's all created inside somebody's head, and that no two versions of that world will ever be the same. I like it for that reason, as well as for the simplicity in creating it. I made a drama myself, and I don't think it would be anywhere near as easy to write and direct and script and act and, I didn't act myself, but, you know, costume and set and props and makeup and VFX, etc. In audio drama, it's so much easier for one person to be able to manage all of that.
Yeah, you just need a microphone and a box with some old tape in or something like that, don't you? The archers, you know, somebody can make cow noises.
If you're giving birth to a sheep, sure.
Yeah.
I'm told it was jelly or something like that. Oh, no, yogurt. It was yogurt. Yogurt for the squelching of the lamb coming out.
Right.
And the tape, as you say, for the straw.
So you graduate, and you, what was your next thing after that? Do you kind of, because you've been doing teaching work and things like that, what's the kind of mix of things that you did after you graduated?
Well, I graduated from bachelor's, and then after some convincing from my parents and my boyfriend, went into the master's at the University of Sunderland as well. And it was after the master's, and I graduated in 2014, that I then went into teaching at the university. I started at the beginning of 2015. And alongside that, I was looking at creating podcasting myself in a way to meet other people in the industry and create engaging content, as well as like working as a freelance producer. But I didn't limit myself to audio production. Initially, I was thinking of doing freelance video production. But then after doing that for a while, I fell out of love with it. And I'm very pleased that the audio parts of my life took over.
What did you fall out of love with the video?
I guess it could be different if I had different experiences and different people working with, but a lot of the things that I was doing in video production, because of course a lot of it is chasing for clients and trying to get work, is I found myself doing a lot of work that was creating online video series for people that they could sell as packages. So, and I sort of spread by word of mouth from that. I was working with a lovely woman called Kate. I forgot her surname. A lovely woman called Kate. And she passed me on to her friend, Emma. And then she passed me on to her friend as well. So I was getting some work by creating these for individuals who were entrepreneurs trying to sell their content online.
Everybody wanted a video at that time. This kind of comes in phases, doesn't it? You know, everybody wants a photo. Everybody wants a video. Then everybody wants an infographics, you know, animation. Then everybody wants a podcast.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like you kind of go, yeah, but, you know, have you thought about this? Because what you're doing is just, you know, it's just, you know, there's a million of these on LinkedIn already. You know?
Mm-hmm. And you must be experiencing that right now as well with the growth of podcasting.
Well, I mean, again, that was kind of next question, really, is kind of what, you know, what, how did you form your ideas about, you know, what a podcast is? How have you talked about that with people to be able to pick up clients and to develop it and get people to come and take part in your podcast?
Well, I look at it quite well, it depends who you ask, really, doesn't it? I think that a lot of podcasts these days are just this, and this is nice. It's us chatting, and there'll be some good aspects of content among some long-winded conversation. But I always remember growing up listening to Radio Lab, for instance, or This American Life, where there were big teams behind it and it was like a mass produced thing.
I'm just thinking, you use the phrase then, I remember growing up to this. It's like, isn't that all still new? You know, it's like you were 5 years old and you were listening to this. It's like, you know, it's just, it's podcasts have very, very quickly become embedded in our consciousness, haven't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And rightly so, you know, like they're a new form of media that it, like Netflix, we can access it whenever we want, or other streaming services, of course. They're just part of how people live these days. Yeah. For me, I never really grew up with radio. Like my parents and family listened to it on occasion, but it was never something central to my world. Acting and playing the saxophone was when I was younger, but I want to say grow up listening to podcasts. It's weird, isn't it? For me, that'll have been since the age of 18 or 19.
Yeah, so over the last 10 years, you know, 10 yeah. 15 years or so. And it's what then, so the kind of style of podcast, because the reason I do this kind of style of podcast is because I'm just incredibly lazy. And I want to churn them out. And it's like, so, you know, you don't edit them or anything like that. You know, it's very simple and it's a nice chat and I feel better after the end of the chat. And that's kind of enough. So, but you're am I right in thinking that you're trying to push it a little bit further in the way that you do them?
Well, yeah, a little bit further. And just to take quarrel with what you said there, it's not lazy. It's good strategy. You're doing something that I think if I'd have established a model early on where it was a case of I would just record and not worry about the conversational quality, and not be spending like a whole weekend of time editing down something to be like exactly what I wanted every weekend, it would have been a lot simpler and a lot nicer on my time and I could focus on other things. So I think you're doing it in a much more time beneficial way than I was doing it.
So what's your style? What's the kind of stuff that you've worked on in the past and that you have you know, taken pride in doing?
Well, there's a hybrid, I suppose, that I'm doing mostly. And it's different for different projects, so it depends where we start chatting around. But for instance, at the moment, I'm making a few different podcasts, and one of them is basically like this, except a bit more documentary structure, mixing together different interviews and finding ways to link material, but focusing on one person's story. And that's my 12-part podcast series with the Standalone charity at the moment, which is really, really lovely. And Standalone work with people who've gone through estrangement in their lives, whether that's they've been cast out by their family or they've chosen to leave members of their family behind. And that's been a really nice series to work on, despite the really difficult subject matter at times. So that's much more like this. And then conversely, like, for instance, and I know this is not podcast, but when I made my Radio 4 documentary in 2018, Drawing in the Dark, that was much more experimental and sound focused and like a bit more chaotic, but structured. And I like chaotic structure. When you mix people's interviews together and juxtapose off different things and conflict ideas. And a lot of the work that I do is I'm trying to make it like that step further into quote unquote quality editing that you might expect from an audio documentary side rather than a recorded conversational podcast style. But most things I do are hybrids of those.
And the kind of feedback that you get from them, is there a preference for, you know, which are the ones that you find in a I mean, my rule of thumb at the moment, I've started listening to Julie London, she's the singer, a podcast called Speaking of Young with Laura London.
And
there's like
it.
50 episodes, which some are about, you know, some are nearly 2 hours long. And they're conversational ones like this with Jungian analysts. But I'm just drawn into it. And for me, it's not about the total number of listeners that she gets for these podcasts. It's the relationship that you build up with people over time. So I'm probably going to commit myself to listening to all 50 episodes of this so far and future ones that she produces to catch up on them. And that's a big commitment in a world where you're encouraged to move on to the next new thing and the next new thing, and, you know, look at the top 10 and follow what's, and so a podcast, you know, are we talking, what's your focus on that? Do you think about it in terms of number of listeners, or do you think about it in terms of the strength of the ongoing relationship that you can build with a smaller number of listeners, but more committed maybe?
I guess my answer is all of those, in one of those dodging your question answers.
I was going to say, get off the fence and give me one answer. Is it, you know, I mean, you're trying it out. What works best for you? What's your gut instinct as to where you'd like to take it? Do you think, you know, that kind of, you know, those kind of considered documentaries are very difficult and intense to do. It takes a lot of thinking and mindfulness and organizing to make those decisions about bringing that, you know, kind of patchwork of fragments together into a coherent story. Yeah. Or is it something that you kind of allow to, and with the podcast, we've got the freedom to do both. But which one is the kind of, what kind of podcast do you listen to now?
There's so many questions there, Rob. I'm going to start by just like going, dude, first of all, if I could make anything forever, it would be definitely the more, like, as you were talking about, the more built up, the more structured, the more time onerous documentary styles. Definitely. Which ones do I like to listen to? It's mostly those kinds as well. I still love the Song Exploders and the Radio Lab and the This American Life. That's my, personally, my world. And I know that there's a place for all different kinds of audio content. But yeah, that's what I'm most drawn to, definitely.
And so what do you think about the kind of fads and, you know, kind of the you know, podcasting's become very, you know, it's being monetized. It's been
good. I make money from it, you know.
Yeah, but is it going to be big production houses that will dominate, who put money behind marketing, or is people like ourselves who are small independents, are we still going to be around?
I think it's going to be difficult, but yeah, we'll be around. I think that because podcasting is so on everyone's lips right now, like every second company that you'll come across is starting a podcast. There's one for Primark that's been going for a couple of years. My friend Beth Duncan has just started doing one with, oh gosh, I forgot the name of the company. I'm going to annoy myself listening back later.
You'll remind yourself in a minute when you think of something else.
Yeah, no, it always happens, doesn't it? So, I mean, it's different, right? So, for instance, I've been making podcasts recently with Sunderland Libraries, and they wanted a series that was like a self-contained series that could work as a legacy project for them. I've been working, as I said, with a standalone podcast, and that charity wanted a podcast that captures people's stories. And then I've been working with New Writing North, and this company, this charity, I should say, it's a company and a charity, wanted to do something that was more like what the BBC might do and do some series and then commission some series. So I've been working on two series for them, one that was more conversational and poetic in style, and then one that was more documentary in style and involved working with an audio producer on a more documentary kind of thing. And these different spaces all want different things. It just depends, as you say, and you're exactly right. It's a case of developing a relationship with your audience. And that's all audio has ever been, isn't it? It's just how someone takes the content that you've created or the words that you've said and how they connect with that. And different companies are going to want different things. So, but you did ask whether, I mean, of course, competition is getting increasingly difficult now with the formation of the Podcast Academy recently as well from last week. The big players that have the more cash and the bigger teams are going to be able to, I guess, dominate the industry. I don't think, therefore, there's no place for people like you and I, because we'll find money where we can, but it will be harder amongst a sea of bigger fish.
Do you have a process of that expectation management that you have with clients? So when you first sit down with somebody and they say, yeah, I'd really like this to be a series of 150 episodes that tell the history of, you know, Western Europe, and you say, well, actually, you know, you need to go to the BBC for that because they've got the resources for it. Or if somebody's like, somebody's the other way around and says, yeah, we want something really kind of, really down in with the kids kind of stuff. I sound terrible saying that, don't I? But yeah, it's what's the process when you sit down with somebody and say, and you try and identify what it is that they are actually wanting to communicate? Because the form follows from that rather than saying, well, we want it in this style and we want it to be doing this. It's like, well, what are you actually trying to say?
Yeah, I've not actually had anyone go, I want it to be like a really long thing, quite interestingly. Most people, they have the idea of making series already. And even if they don't, like they will come around to that idea really quickly, quite interestingly.
And that gives repeat work for the producers, which is a good thing that they're considering doing a whole series of commission programs rather than it just being one-offs.
Yeah, or rather than it being a continual, like, weekly or monthly thing. Like, they do, it's interesting. They think of it in terms of, like, a short-term project, but then it might have legs to develop afterwards. And that's at least my experience with the three clients that I've mentioned thus far. It's been in series, which actually, that's really surprising. Because you'd expect it, like you've asked, like, just make this podcast for us and we'll pay you on retainer. I've not had that yet.
Maybe that's the next stage. I mean, it's tentative, isn't it? People aren't necessarily sure yet of what what they're using them for. You know, people are I'm just looking at the Colab project, which is podcasting across disciplines, and you describe on your website that it's looking at using podcasting and comedy to engage with young audiences with a public health message.
Well, this is a university project, so it came from the university connecting faculties and seeing what faculties can do with each other. So I worked underneath Richard Berry and Caroline Mitchell from the University of Sunderland's Faculty of Arts and Creative Industries in partnership with John Mooney from Health Sciences. So that's how this came about. This one's really Richard's baby, but I was the producer and the editor on board of it, and the person like helping organize the workshops that brought people together to try out creating comedy and then make that into audio sketches. So it was a fun project to be on, but a very different. Like that was funded from central money from the university, for instance.
And what would you take in from that if you're, you know, going to pitch for, you know, the local health authority or something? Well, I mean, it's a process I'm thinking about myself at the moment in terms of, you know, well, we are our media and communications managers of institutions, public bodies and businesses tend to be based around a model of mass communications kind of defined in the 1950s, I suppose, which is very kind of transactional. It's about giving people information. But what it doesn't have is what you mentioned right at the beginning was that participative element. What are the kind of messages that we need to, how will we convince people to say, you know what, just put a bit of money aside in your marketing budget? And in universities, it seems to be quite an expanding marketing budget to just identify some projects where you can do participative media and communications and arts that will be part of your engagement process. What are the kind of things you've learned from doing the arts project? So maybe the best way to answer this is to talk about Arty Party a bit and kind of how that came about and what your involvement has been in that.
Sure. Well, Arty Party is something that I do regularly. I do it weekly, and it is it's a hybrid project. It started out as a radio program that I launched with Caroline Mitchell back in 2015, and it was a space 1 hour a week on the radio station to bring together artists and creatives that work in participatory settings mostly, to have conversations, to make connections, to meet each other, and to promote projects on air. And so over time, that grew. And as you're talking about this audience development and connecting with people, I think audio and podcasting does that like almost no other media, in being able to cultivate a lovely niche audience of people, whether that niche is local or whether that niche is around a subject or both, like Arty Party, which is about mostly the Northeast artists and creatives. I made it into a podcast middle of last year. And alongside that, we attached the body Sunderland Culture on board. So Sunderland Culture were interested in helping me financially to keep it sustainable, whilst also taking advantage of an existing platform of connected artists and creative people. So they were sort of being able to disseminate messages about Sunderland Culture and to help, because they're funded by Arts Council and Heritage Lottery Fund in order to support creative individuals in their own development and development of communities. It just so happened that I was making something that they were thinking about doing themselves, so why not support me instead and take advantage of that? So Arty Party since last year, I don't know whether this will continue, fingers crossed, has been a nice pot of funding that I've been able to add to my living allowances and has helped cover me. So...
And what's it
that's
been
how
like
it's developed, sorry.
You know, no, that's great. It's good to hear that somebody's got that commitment to it, and that it's kind of, because you need to be paid to do these things. You can't do it if you don't get paid.
Well, I was doing it for 3.5 years without it, but it's so much nicer to have it as something that doesn't drain your time and expenses away.
Amen. I think there's many people would nod at that. What I'm interested in as well is the process. How have you found it getting people... You know, to kind of, I've now that I've got, you know, this will be the 57th podcast I've done for Decentered Media, 58th.
Congratulations.
They seem easier to do, but they, you know, it's kind of like, that's because I put less effort into them. I find it now, it's easier to get people to come and take part.
What's
it been like for you to, what's that journey been like for over those 3.5 years, 4 years to get people involved? What was it like at the beginning? I've got this great idea to do a podcast and, I'm not sure about that. And then now has there been a change?
It's weird because Arty Party began as a radio show. It always had that like live come and be on it. It's a special kind of thing feeling about it. So I didn't have that issue of getting people on board initially, necessarily. Just like how to learn and manage the process of getting people on board a radio show, which I was still learning at the time in 2015, starting it up on a continual basis, like bringing people together every week. I think as the name became more popular, not popular, that's the wrong word.
More well known,
then it became easier. I think anything can do that, whether it's radio show or podcast. But yeah, maybe in regards to that, I do another podcast regularly called Speak Up Sunderland. And I've had that experience with Speak Up Sunderland that I think it's a bit more difficult to get people on occasion unless it's in a context. For instance, we do live events with Speak Up Sunderland now in the city centre pub called the Fire Station. And because it's there, I find it so much easier to gather momentum and interest behind it, because it's not just you sitting and chatting with somebody. It's you going to a thing. There's a specialness to it, I suppose. Which is weird, because you'd think that it would be so much easier if it was two people just sitting at their computers like this, just having a nice chat. Have you found it difficult getting people on board yours?
Yes. There was an occasion a few weeks ago where I kind of threw a wobbler because nobody had come. I was at an event and I was doing the podcast and nobody had come and take part in the podcast, despite it being very well explained and things like that. And I kind of spent quite a bit of time kind of blaming myself and then blaming other people, and then blaming myself again for blaming other people. Because for me, I'm kind of an intuitive type and I can see the leap. You know, I can, oh yeah, it sounds really great. When I get something, yeah, you jump into it. Mm. But, you know, lots of other people don't share that kind of kind of mindset, and yeah, they kind of needed to be spelt out. Well, so if I come and what does it mean to be taken part of this? How is it going to be used? And you have to answer all of those kind of questions. And oh, this is going out into the public domain. And I'm like, yeah, you know, let's just do it. You know, let's just have some fun and say what you're going to say. I don't care, as long as you don't, you know, I can't afford lawyers, so please don't slander anybody. But it's and don't swear gratuitously. They're the two rules. We try and be respectful. But then at the same time, and there's a kind of reticence and a kind of self-editing that initially when people, I think the issue was I was taking something that I'm very familiar with into a situation where the people who I was with weren't familiar with that. And that it was an alien presence for them. And the way the day was designed, everything was supposed to be, you know, kind of an open process. I can't remember the word, description, like those unconference type things. You can kind of go to whatever you want, and, you know, kind of if you want to go and do, I don't know, yoga and meditation, you can go and do that. So of course everybody just ended up gravitating around a couple of flipboards and doing the same things that people do at these kind of, you know, kind of sessions anyway. So for me, I'm getting sitting in the corner, getting more and more annoyed, and not being able to control my emotion about that. You know, I was kind of really kind of, I suppose, hurt in a way, because, you know, you're being ignored and abandoned with it.
Bless you, Rob.
No, but it's because I'd invested in it beforehand, but and I'd been doing it for a long time. But those people who attended the event hadn't, so there was no reason for them to invest in it.
I saw you at a similar one last year, and I was so thrilled to take part in the creative discussions with the other people that you had assembled there. And I think that I learned more from just being part of that conversation and listening to you and I forget the names, Zahir, I think, or...
the stuff we did at Salford, yeah.
Yeah, and then the woman from Ireland and the two who were from the community radio station... I forget where again, but I remember really enjoying and learning a lot from that conversation. And for me, that's where I think the learning process is best, when it's like conflicting opinions or bringing together people with interestingly connected creative minds into the same space and seeing where it unfolds.
Do you find you're in a position, you know, were you taught that? You know, was that was, I take it that wasn't part of your, you know, facilitation, because one of the things I think you're heading in the direction of is facilitation for events.
Oh, I am a facilitator. That's what I do. That's what I do on Arty Party. It's what I do on Speak Up Sunderland. It's what I do when I'm creating a radio documentary, even though those people might not meet each other. I'm facilitating a listen, or facilitating an environment that will create a listen, just like you do when you make your podcast and you bring people together and you've got those really cool microphones on pens that people often like take photos of, because it's a really novel but awesome way of doing it.
Next, I'm gonna have to change it now, aren't I? I'm gonna have to put them on like you know, dusters, or, you know, kind of
yes,
wands. That'll be the next one.
Little flamingos and hula skirts or something. Yeah. Not hula skirts.
So that kind of what's your model then of what's your Have you studied being a community facilitator? Is it something that you've picked up?
Yeah. I mean, if you go to a university and you take part in a seminar, that's essentially a facilitated experience. And if you've got a good tutor who doesn't just occupy all the airspace, then that's what it's what it's about. It's about learning from each other in the room. And that's something that I do in my teaching. It's something I do when I'm presenting and producing Arty Party as a radio show. It's something that I try and instill on Betty and Stevie, who do the Speak Up Sunderland podcast, etc. No, I've never learnt, quote unquote, about how to facilitate in a community, but it is something that I've done in my jobs and do. And that's on a regular basis, teaching and podcasting, as well as when I do, say, for instance, my refugee and asylum seeker projects, where we're bringing people together to learn about radio skills in a comfortable setting, or working with schools and community groups to create audio dramas like in Macam Crack in 2017. Whatever it is, I find that maybe that's a word. When you started this interview, what do you do, Jay? Maybe that's it. I facilitate audio.
Yeah, it's one of those words. What is it you do? Well, I facilitate. What do you facilitate? Well, bits and pieces. I kind of, you know, it's kind of work in the background, helping other people to do what they do. It's not really that I do particularly that much yourself. The process of facilitation is quite an interesting one. But there was a phrase that you used then, which was kind of the comfortable setting. Yeah. Are you quite, do you have to control the setting and the area in order to, how do you know you've got a comfortable setting?
Well, I'm going to be big-headed now. People say it sometimes, and I go, oh, really? That's good. Like, it's a continual process of not feeling like you're good at something, and then people saying, oh, you were really nice, and I didn't feel on edge. And I'm like, oh, thank goodness. Like, it still baffles me, because I'm always concerned about everybody that I'm in around, and want to make sure that it's the best experience it can be for everybody. That's just, I think, who I am. So whenever I've got people on the Arty Party radio show, I'm so hyper aware that they're coming into a radio studio and talking into microphones, and know that it's going out live as well as is being recorded to be put out later. So, I think that's always something I'm aware of, and just gets easier with practice. And the more comfortable you feel, the more you look like you know what you're doing, and are happy with how things are going, and not panicking like I might have been in the first episodes, like trying to learn how to do everything at the same time and occupy people's spaces as well. I think that by being reasonably enthusiastic and calm and compassionate in every moment of doing it, then it's transferring to the environment around me.
So it's about your relationship with the people who are taking part rather than necessarily what they are trying to get out of it, I suppose. It's like kind of unwind it a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And to be honest, I'm not great at it. I think I'm good, but I was working with the New Writing North project, for instance. The Rich Seams episodes, that 7-part podcast series that was about bringing poets together to have conversations about poets and the North and Northernness and what Northernness means to poets in the North, etc. That was these conversations. I was recording them, but they were facilitated by a poet called Andrew McMillan. And I just remember being in awe at the way that he was conducting the interviews and leading from person to person in such a really interesting but academically profound way that I don't think I'm capable of. And I'll always be looking at the way that other people do things and thinking, oh, I should be taking that element, and I wish I was anywhere near as good as that person is at that thing. I think there's a lot of room to improve. But
professional envy can always set in at that point, can't it? You know, it's like
all the time. But even the way you speak, Rob, you think so much, and it's so clear in the way that you present, and you've got such really interesting, distinguished word choices that I wish that I was, good as you.
It really just comes from as you say, from practice. And the interesting thing I find, in the Podcast Academy, maybe we should recommend a module on facilitation and listening and skills for kind of almost. I think that the one of the primary skills for this kind of podcast is to have done a counselling course, really, because it's that deep listening that you're doing with people. And that's why I like using headphones, because it gives you that engagement. And I find that people don't talk over each other when they've got headphones on.
Yeah.
So they're naturally sitting around a table, people will interject and two or three conversations will kick off, and you're trying to chair a meeting, whereas with a podcast... and this is why I think it's got more benefits for organizational development. Actually, it forces people to, not forces is the wrong word, but it very much directs people to listen in a way which is, as you described earlier, that intensity in your head. And you're hearing somebody in a very different way talk about their experience, which they've perhaps never enunciated or spoken out loud prior to that. And the whole nature of kind of radio and podcasting allows people to facilitate that kind of opening up of thoughts and ideas.
So I think that feeds into like your initial questions of when you're asking, how can we convince people outside of radio and audio, like how the benefits of podcasting as a medium is? Well, that's exactly it. And I met a woman called Katie Mitchell who she was on the phone for the Samaritans. So people would call her up, and her role really on the other end of the phone was to just listen and then keep saying, tell me more. And essentially that's the role of a Samaritan, to just be there to listen, and listening, being heard, has such restorative power. So I think has so many potentially different beneficial avenues in health fields, for instance.
Yeah, maybe training healthcare professionals. I said this to a group of students I met this morning. I was at a community media cafe in Leicester this morning, and the communication arts students, who were, was the course I used to work on a few years ago, and they kind of gathered to kind of think about some ideas with for community media, and I was asked to speak to them. And I said to them, you know, I don't really want to ever teach media students again, because they kind of think that they know it, you know. But I'd love to work with, you know, health students, health and life science students, or community development students, or, you know, social work students, because introducing some of the media techniques that we've got, like podcasting, can be invaluable for those facilitated discussions and getting deep into a topic with people without it feeling, you know, as being a kind of fairly, you know, there's some warmth about it when you do it right and in the right environment, which kind of, you know, it isn't, when you're doing it on TV and you're in front of a camera, it's like you're being accused of something, you know, it's like you're being put on the spot. But when you're sitting around a table listening to other people, there's something about that kind of presence of kind of shared experience, that kind of circle. I don't come from that kind of, you know, hippie-ish kind of, we're going to pass the stick around and, you know, we're going to smell the joss sticks burning in the background. But, you know, maybe that's the direction that we need to be heading down. Sorry, I just went off on my head. It's like,
oh, it's very valid. And I love, I mean, when I recorded with you last time in Salford, I was in awe of the fact that you had that box. I don't know the name of the box, but it had the four leads coming out with the headphones, and the fact that, yeah, it does mean that you're intently listening to what other people are saying to you through the headphones, and that helps with the fluidity of the conversation to make sure that everyone finishes sentences and gets heard.
What are the kind of things that you talk about now with prospective students, and, you know, what is it you offer, what do you think should be offered, that is, you know, why we should do this participative media, this community media kind of approach?
I don't really do much of that with students beyond the academic context, at least. Sorry, no, within the academic context. But then, I don't know, I'm an academic tutor, so not a lecturer. I don't get to drive the decisions most of the time on what kind of content is taught or what kind of networks are created. But I don't think I'm answering this question properly.
No, let me rephrase it, because the way I ask questions is terrible. I really should do a course about asking questions.
Sometimes you try to bring a few ideas together and then, like, they all get a little bit overlapped with each other.
It's, you know, when I'm trying to transcribe what I say, it's a nightmare because it's like I stop halfway through a sentence and I have to learn to slow down, and I'm not very good at it. And it's like six or seven thoughts come out at once. It's terrible.
And I think the annoying thing for me is I've wanted to respond to like five of them, and then there'll be the sixth one, and I'm like,
I've gone off on another tangent somewhere else by that point. So, but some point, okay. So, kind of independently, whatever kind of organisation you're working for, whatever kind of business you're running yourself, or whatever kind of networks you're from, you know, there's something that you have experienced and you recognise about this participative approach to media and arts. What is it you're going to say to people who would maybe be thinking about, you know, signing up for it? You know, kind of what's in it for them?
Well, I found it hugely beneficial personally, signing up for community radio in the form of it being student radio at the university. It was hugely instrumental in giving me practical skills and helping me develop relationships with other people that I just wouldn't be able to do if I wasn't surrounded by a supportive community of brilliant, like-minded people who were interested in creating engaging content and all that kind of stuff. There's so many things to talk about here, as ever, but I think there's a huge power in being able to bring people together, in that, as we've been talking about, it's a way to allow people to feel more in touch with either other people or the world around them, or the way that they're feeling, or have restorative qualities or whatever, whether it's skills based, whether it's meeting other people and other connections, or challenging as well. I mean, so often, I mean, we're drip fed news these days in a way that was never before. It's a case of headline culture. And if you want to rebel, like, you can feel free to tweet about it. But what's that really going to do, except in extreme circumstances? Like, we live in a culture where we can voice our opinion all the time. But, you know, if there's a march where a million people across the UK are taking place in 2018, like, it just gets struck down as, no, that's not the will of the people. Sorry. Doesn't matter that you've brought a million people together on the streets of London, you know, like, we live in a society these days where I think the importance of community media is becoming increasingly vital. And it's because of people like you making podcasts like Decentered Media that are potentially creating new ideas that will not only help audio live on in a new age, but also help people feel like they have the voice to speak out against a system, because at the moment I think that voice is dwindling.
It's quite profound stuff there. Lots more to talk about in future episodes as well. So I mean, it's one of the challenges, and we've begun to realize, John and I, when we do the kind of discussion based we meet every week on a Tuesday, and you know, we're kind of starting to realize that it's very easy to just spend time identifying all the problems. So it's nice to spend a couple of minutes where you can say, you know, what would it be like if, you know, could you imagine if we did this? What would it feel like? Because a lot of the time we're you know, we have to, if we come up with an idea, we then have to map out its, you know, its outcomes and its objectives, and you have to go through a process, and you have to spend 6 months getting funding for it. Then it never happens, and then because somebody's misread what you've put and put you in a different pile in the funding application process, and that's 6 months of your life, you know, kind of sorry, I'm moaning, aren't I? But the
it's okay, I could join you and moan about funding applications. We could do that for an hour.
Fairly universal. Well, actually, one of the ideas for a future podcast is to talk to some people in community organizations, to, you know, who talks to the administrators, who talks to the funding managers, who talks to the, you know, the people who organize the buildings, that kind of stuff, the IT support. You know, it's one of the hidden sides of community organizations and community, certainly for community media, because community media is about walking into a studio or picking up a camera, and people don't necessarily, you know, have their voice heard who are involved in, I wouldn't use the word support services, but the services that make it function. So I think one of the things I'd like to do in the future is talk to more people who are kind of, give that background to an organisation. Who are you planning to talk to in the future? Who's on your wish list of people to invite into your podcasts?
Oh, there's so many. I mean, I just off the back of the funding question there, I do that a lot with Arty Party. A lot of it is advice for artists and creatives. So I'm pleased to say that we do engage with funders. And that, for me, was a particular target that I wanted to achieve, so that it was not just people making artistic projects, but also the gatekeepers. So I've tried to bring on gatekeeper organizations as well as funding bodies involved in the conversations as much as possible. Moving forward, I completely agree. I don't have any particular individuals in mind. Like, I want this person, I want X, I want Y. I'm always wanting to take advantage and find the gaps that exist and make sure that I'm doing something that can help offset that, for whatever gap that might be. So if it is someone, for instance, I run a small arts organization in Sunderland, which is about supporting grassroots artists. And a month ago, a student came to me and said, there isn't this thing being like a really low key, calm space for people to just go and work on creative projects, but not feel the need to network or present, but just be alone together and do art. So I said, well, let's make it happen. And now I'm working with this student on, his name's Jacob Hunter. And we're doing these sessions every fortnight in a cafe in Sunderland where it's just come and get on with art. And that's only happened because someone said, this doesn't exist yet. So what I'm trying to do...
So you're putting you're the facilitator. You're drawing on your natural ability to facilitate, to enable other people to come together.
Yeah, I like to think that. Yeah.
Yeah. You can be confident about that. It sounds like it is. Listen to what people do and draw them together so that, you know, not everything's a party.
That's my mistake as a what's the word? Extrovert. I'm either an extrovert or an extroverted introvert. I'm not sure exactly, but like I'm a larger than life type in most occasions, unless I'm tired or whatever. Or in my depressive states. And that for me has meant that I've always just been like, yeah, let's bring everyone together. Let's go chat and communicate. But I don't think about the people that find the anxiety in that all the time. And I've started to do that a lot more in the last year or two.
Yeah, recognize. I did a vlog the other week where I talked about my experience at networking events, where it's all very much about, hey, you know, the stance of people standing in a room, projecting their egos at each other. And it's like, for me, it's like, you know, just turn down the volume and all of those things. Can we not just sit silently for an hour first and just gather our thoughts and kind of come together with something? And, you know, in the past, I've always fueled myself on caffeine in order to get through those kind of things. But I've started to, the last few weeks, I've kind of just go back to drinking weak green tea and don't kind of think that you have to keep up with this, because it's not adding anything to my life to kind of have that frenetic pace. And you know, we talked earlier about the event that I kind of misjudged. And that was very much, you know, the buzz in the morning, but the afternoon, you know, the dominating extroverts in the room were spent. There was not much else that they could do in terms of thinking. And it was kind of, that would have been the point to kind of pick up with the kind of people who were on a more slow burn approach to it. And it's judging these things in different ways. And I think podcasts have this unique position to be able to, if we think about them carefully and draw, you know, it's really important why we kind of share our experiences with these things, I think, to kind of say, well, hang on a minute, you're drawing something out of somebody who doesn't walk into a room and instantly stand at the front and want to project themselves onto everybody else and they're great and they're wonderful. There's a role for that, and we need people who do that, but it's the third or fourth person sat in the corner who's quite quiet, who's quite reserved, who might have the answers and the ideas that we need, but just doesn't want to have to push through all of that nonsense that extroverts often put in the way.
I shouldn't have to as well, but we've formed this kind of creative media society where if you get media people together, that's what's expected. And bless you, there you are, having to fuel yourself with caffeine upon caffeine. And I'm pleased to hear that you're kicking that habit a little bit. That's an unhealthy thing to try and maintain for your own physical health.
Oh, I'll go back to it at some point. I like it. Coffee's good, but you know, it's like sometimes you need a break, don't you? You know, it's like
yeah.
Everything. So, how can people get in touch with you? What's the best way for people to contact you if they want to find out more about what you do and book your services or have a chat or come to one of your events?
Oh, I'm always open to chat, always. So my favourite ways would either be Instagram or Twitter, where I'm at jsykesmedia, or my email is also jsykesmedia@gmail.com, or my website is jsykesmedia.com. So those are the best ways to get in contact with me directly.
Brilliant. So this has been a Decentered Media podcast with me, Rob Watson. The website is decentered.co.uk, and you can get in touch with me on Instagram or Twitter via Decentered Media, or you can email me at robwatson@decentered.co.uk. But until next time, thank you very much. You've been listening to the Decentered podcast. I'm Rob Watson. If you want to find out more information, contact me on Decentered Media via Twitter or go to decentered.co.uk.